this week I've been listening to a podcast. And the episodes I was listening to was about the Donner Party. So I was listening while my daughter was taking her nap, and I had just finished the part where the little girl, like the little 7-year-old, eats the people. And she was like, yeah, more humans. And I go in to get Sydney up from her nap, and she wakes up and she says, Sydney eat mama, mama delicious. And I almost died. And I was like, no, mama, not delicious. She's like, yeah, mama delicious.
No, she did not.
Yes. It
was. Could she hear your podcast from the other room?
No, I had my headphones on. Yeah. Craziest, creepiest thing. You talk about being scared of children. It was just like the wrong thing for her to say, like right after I listened to it.
Oh, we're back to cannibalism again.
Yay, cannibalism. So, welcome to the Litflix podcast, episode 4. Tonight's episode is Never Let Me Go by Sir Kazuo Ishiguro. Published in 2005, the film by the same name was released in 2010. It is directed by Mark Romanek. I don't know if I'm saying that right. And it stars Carey Mulligan, Keira Knightley, and Andrew Garfield. While I was researching for my notes, I was on Google, and one of the top suggested searches is this based on a true story? So I kind of wanted to take this moment to set the record straight for anyone that's still asking Google this question. Yes, it is true. Great Britain invented cloning right after World War II. It still goes on today. There are no incurable diseases there, and we just harvest organs from clones. Also, for those people who wonder, The Martian is also based on a true story.
So we can just, like, head to 7-Eleven, and next to the, like, hot dog rotator, you can just pick up your
liver,
lungs on ice.
Oh, lungs would be even better. So, yeah. I hope that clears it up for everybody, and don't send us letters because I know I'm right. Nobody email us for this.
You're 100% right. You know how we were talking about maybe sometimes we have some accuracy issues?
Sometimes we do.
This won't be one of them.
Yeah, this is 100% not one of them. Stop Googling, everybody. It's true.
Yeah, it's a little bit disturbing, the results that come up on incomplete Google searches.
I was so happy when I saw that.
It's so disheartening, though, in humanity.
It made me just love people more.
I was like, no, this world is coming to an end. We're doomed.
I mean, people, come on. It was great. I appreciated it.
Together. It is pretty funny.
That was one of my favorite things. Even about The Martian, when all these people are like, hey, I overheard someone talking about how it's a true story. So I'm glad this can fall in those lines.
Here's the thing. What are they teaching in schools?
Nothing. Clearly nothing.
They changed math.
Screw that.
But they can't tell people that we have not yet landed on Mars. What the fuck?
Watch The Incredibles 2 way too much, and he gets mad because they changed math. And I'm like, I feel you. Math. You cannot change math. Math is math.
Yeah, so Britain, though, did do cloning. They did Dolly the sheep, right? Is that her name?
Yeah, so then it just moved underground after that.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
It still goes on today. So, you know, the next movement is clone power.
That's so sad considering the themes in this book.
Okay, well, that's that's for later.
Have a heart.
I have a heart.
No, you don't.
Okay, so I had some little tidbits about the actors in the movie.
Okay.
This is Carey Mulligan's. Am I saying that right? Mulligan?
Mulligan, yeah. Okay, also like a knockoff of Michelle Williams. Can we discuss that?
Because yeah, I get them confused all the time.
Me too. Talk about clones. Okay.
So this is her favorite book, and she really kind of fought for this role. And
is it really?
Yeah, and she...
Whose favorite book is this?
She was really concerned. She knew somebody was going to adapt this, and she was worried that she wouldn't be old enough to play Kathy, and she knew even if she wasn't the best Kathy, that she was meant to play Kathy.
Okay.
And they actually didn't give her this role until they saw her in the movie An Education.
I've heard that's a really good movie. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I just added it to my Netflix queue.
Another thing about her is her... Okay, first of all, I'm going to talk about her voice, but let me just say that I'm really sick. And I'm so sorry that I sound...
You don't actually sound anything.
I don't? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I feel like I can feel my voice wearing out and being really gravelly.
You
so.
Sound fine.
Oh, we didn't talk about what we were drinking.
Oh, sorry. In honor of schools and teachers, we're drinking a red apple. It is cranberry juice and green apple vodka.
That sounds delicious, and I wish I was drinking it too.
What are you talking about?
I'm not drinking it. I'm drinking a hot toddy.
Oh, fine.
Because I'm ill. I'm so ill.
This is actually really good. I got the cranberry grape juice, and it's delicious with the green
apple. I bet it's amazing. Oh my God, I bet it's like tart and sweet and so good.
It's really good.
Does it taste like a Jolly Rancher or something?
Kind of, 100%. It's so good.
I'm going to try it someday when I'm not dying.
Okay, I'm kind of sad that you are not, but whatever.
I know, I'm sad. But one thing I was going to say about Carey Mulligan is her voice. In the movie, she does this like internal monologue that's a voiceover.
A narration, and... per se?
Oh, excellent word choice. Harkening back to the days when I didn't know what analytical meant. She is a narrator.
An inner monologue voiceover. I'm so sorry. It's okay. Okay, continue.
I didn't even like think about it before I said it. It just came out. You're dying. Okay.
I am dying. That was great.
Okay. Way to overcomplicate things, Abby. So her voice sounds so much like somebody that I cannot place that I've heard in a movie before.
Oh.
It was a stupid point that I was making. It sounds so familiar.
I thought they did a great job casting from the girl who plays like the younger version of Kathy.
She looked exactly like her.
I know. I could picture her growing up to be Carey Mulligan.
It's insane. Or Michelle Williams. Yeah.
So Carey Mulligan and Keira Knightley are actually friends, and they were both in Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And they are the same age, but Carey played her younger sister Kitty in that movie.
Uh-huh. Kitty's the real frivolous one that runs off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Carey begged Keira to play Ruth, and Keira Knightley did not want to take this role because she couldn't relate to being in a love triangle.
Because Ruth is a cunt.
You can relate to being a clone used for your organs? Question
but you
mark.
You can't relate to being in a
like this was your issue you couldn't relate to.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I feel like Keira Knightley has been involved in love triangles. She just never knew it because she's always the one that got the guy.
That would make sense because she's adorable.
Yeah, they said they tried to make her look plain and it's just impossible. Blah, blah, blah. I'm so pretty. Look at me.
She's gorgeous.
And yeah, I absolutely love Keira Knightley. I'm kind of obsessed with her. I think she's fantastic.
I think she's fantastic, too. She's our age. She's born in the same year as we were.
Yeah, she makes me feel very underachieving.
I think a lot of people make us feel underachieving, though.
Probably because we are underachievers.
That might be our first problem.
Could be.
Maybe we drink too much.
Oh, phooey.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, I could see that they tried to make her look plain with the haircut. That haircut drove me nuts. I didn't like it.
Carey Mulligan's haircut in this thing looks like a bad mullet, so I don't know.
Oh my God, it's so terrible because they put extensions over a shorter cut. Is that what happened? You can always tell when they do, yeah. Because her hair was her hair was that cut that she had later in the film.
Okay.
Anyway, that's off topic.
Carey Mulligan also tried to learn how to drive for this role, and she failed her test.
Oh, wait. Before we move on, I have to say something.
Yeah.
because you correctly pronounced on the last episode Deborah Kerr's name, and I corrected you and said, it's Deborah Kerr. And you were like, oh, is it? Okay. And you totally believed me.
And then and I said, Deborah Kerr the rest of that episode. So shame on you.
That was a huge mistake. Don't ever believe anything I say.
Well, I just did again, so.
Well, I mean, mulligan is kind of hard. I mean, but Kerr, I was pronouncing it phonetically. I had no idea
where Kerr came
from. Okay. You are much more classically trained in actors from the old times than I am.
Deborah Kerr is a star.
No, Jesus Christ.
That was her own line, not mine.
Who says that about themselves?
I know. I looked it up to prove you wrong, and that's what I found.
I'm glad you did. I wish you had said something in the moment, though.
I know. I just let you go.
Next time, argue with me and don't believe anything I say. And honestly, I'll just stop talking because, like, everything I say is inaccurate.
Hey, look, one woman show.
There you go.
My dream. Okay, so Carrie tried to learn how to drive. She failed her test and she had to film on private roads because she couldn't get her license.
Who's the underachiever now?
Yeah, Carrie.
Carrie fucking Mulligan.
Yeah.
Because she can't drive.
So there.
She's a virgin who can't drive. I'll give you a dollar if you can name that movie.
I don't know.
It's Clueless.
Oh.
You're a virgin who can't drive.
I haven't watched that in forever.
Brittany Murphy. Another Jane Austen reference. Go ahead.
Are you ready to move on to this amazing author who you don't think is amazing?
I do think he's incredibly talented, and I would like to learn more about him.
Okay.
Please continue.
So, Kazuo Ishiguro was born in Nagasaki, Japan in 1954, and his mom was actually there when the U.S. dropped the atomic bomb.
Oh my God.
Yeah, crazy.
Jesus.
His dad is from there, but it doesn't say he was there when the bomb dropped, so I don't know where or what he was doing.
Absentee father.
No. In 1960, at 5 years old, Hiro's dad was an oceanographer, and he took a job in the UK at the National Institute of Oceanography, so they moved to Surrey. And he actually talks a lot about they were only there 15 years after the war. Everybody was very welcoming to them and never treated them any differently.
That's amazing. Well, and especially considering how Americans treated the Japanese.
Right. He had a completely different...
Japanese Americans, even.
Yeah.
It's like...
He had a completely different experience.
That's incredible.
So in 1980, he received his master's in arts and creative writing, and his thesis actually became his first novel, A Pale View of Hills. He wrote a lot about Japan, but he actually didn't go back until, I believe, the 80s, until he'd been gone for at least 30 years. He kind of wrote from the Japan he remembered and imagined, because his parents always talked about going back. We'll go back next year. And they just never did.
That's amazing.
They really raised him.
Considering how he writes, too.
Yeah. His family used to send him Japanese school books and stuff. So he kept up with all the Japanese, kind of their pop culture, because, you know, they thought they were going back.
That's amazing.
So he became a British citizen in 1983. He is currently a member of three different royal societies, and he was knighted in 2018.
Oh, recently. What month? Do we know?
I don't know.
Oh my God. That's so cool, though. This year.
Yeah. He won a Nobel Prize in Literature. I'm going to put a link to his speech in our show notes, but it was really compelling when I listen to it, and it's all about peace and the pride of in the human endeavor.
Oh, that's amazing.
And he talks about a lot about his mom, and it's really inspiring. I thought it was great.
That gives me a lot of insight on how I thought about the book.
It changed a lot for me after I listened to him and I read this, I don't know, this outline that he wrote for it. It was really great. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So Time Magazine named Never Let Me Go the best novel of the year in 2005 and included it in their 100 best novels published between 1923 and 2005.
So in almost a century, basically.
Almost a century. He has a real passion for music, and he actually still writes songs for Stacey Kent, who is a jazz singer.
What?
Mm-hmm. He took a gap year and traveled through Canada, like, writing music when he was younger.
Okay, that's not something we all want to do, obviously.
Right. I think it's really...
That's incredible.
He's really interesting. Also, Never Let Me Go is a Japanese TV drama.
Oh, fun.
We kind of talked about... Oh, those were Korean soap operas. Never mind.
Yeah, but I bet Japanese TV dramas are fun, too.
I would be into watching it.
That might be a fun thing to do in the future.
Might be.
Without subtitles.
Yeah, even better. All right, that's all I really have on him, so...
Are we ready for plot summary?
Yes, I am ready for the plot summary.
Okay. The novel starts out in England in the late 90s. We learn that our narrator is Kathy H. She's 31 and is a carer who's been on the job for more than 11 years. In the movie, it's 9 years because she's only 28 in the movie. Her job involves traveling between recovery centers and helping donors to recuperate after giving a donation, quote unquote.
She
also known as an organ.
Okay. She helps people complete, which I think is interesting. Nobody ever mentions the word die in this book.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was kind of a zombie novel that nobody mentions the Z word.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that.
But I also thought being a carer has to be one of the most emotionally taxing jobs in the world.
Did it seem like, though, it never really hit her? To me, it seemed like she didn't soak it in as much.
She's really good at being perceptive of people's emotions, and I think that really helped her in her job.
Oh, yeah.
I think it makes her even a better person. Like, it really defines who she is and how she relates to people. And she's one of the longest carers that there are. I hate that word.
Can I just say the word carer was never meant for an American mouth to say?
It really isn't. Carer is a horrible word to
say. It only sounds okay when British people say it.
Can you say it with a British accent?
Cara. No, because I have a horrible British accent. Cara. Maybe a New Yorker. No, that's even worse.
Cara. Like, I can't make terrible. It sound better.
Maybe like somebody sitting on a stoop in the Bronx could say it really well, like with a really flat slice of pizza, you know, like.
Okay.
Cara. Oh,
okay.
You know?
Yeah, that like sounds New Yorker. Better.
But that's no. Cara is a terrible word. Continue. I have one thing to say. It's funny that you're reading her that way because I basically read her as like an android.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like not totally emotionless, but.
I didn't see her that way at all.
I saw her as just a total, not a void, just because she could read people so well and she was able to do her job for so long. Mm-hmm. I just feel like she kind of blocked a lot of that emotion out at the very least.
I was going to bring it up later, but we can now. I think it's part of kind of their brainwashing.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely true.
But I think she is a fully formed and I think she takes pride in the work she does by helping them. I think just like probably people at a nursing home take pride in helping older people.
Yeah.
And, you know, after a while, I'm sure part of it doesn't get to you, but I don't think that makes you emotionless.
Yeah, I just feel like to me, and I don't have any like actual text to back this up. I just got the feeling the whole time that she didn't attach to people the way you and I might attach to people, even from the beginning.
Okay.
Like before she was a carer.
Okay. I didn't see it that way, but.
Okay. Also, the names really bothered me, like Kathy H. and Tommy, whatever his initial was. Yeah. That, like.
I was going to ask you about that because I thought maybe they just recycle names. Like, why bother giving children these new names and being creative?
They totally might. I was going on a thing of like, why not do it like Stormtrooper style, like FN2187, you know?
Okay.
And the other thing is I kind of wondered if maybe this was a Hailsham thing.
It might. Well, but once they get out of it, they still have names.
Yeah, but I mean, did Rodney and Chrissy end up choosing their names themselves? Or were they named that? It doesn't matter. I just thought it was interesting because I hated first name, initial. I was like, why even bother with the last initial? Okay,
I think they, the way I took it was they probably recycled names. So there was a Kathy A, a Kathy B.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And she just happens to be Kathy H.
When you said recycled names, I thought, oh, there was a Kathy H in like 10 years ago or something. Oh,
no. I meant there was a Kathy A.
That makes so much more sense.
Okay.
I really like that. Okay. I was not looking at it correctly. The entire book is Kathy H. relaying her memories of childhood, adolescence, and what we come to find is a very brief adulthood to the reader. We learn that Kathy and her beloved friends attended a special exclusive boarding school called Hailsham.
While they're at the school, they have to have a medical exam every week. Can we talk about that? Because I hate going to the doctor once a year. So, I mean,
it goes back to that whole brainwashing thing, though.
Yeah, they are taught how precious their bodies are. And maybe I could learn a little more from them.
You and me both.
So, you know, there might be a benefit for that.
If we were going through there, they'd be like, well, we might be able to take your eyes, but everything else is fucked.
I don't even think you could take my eyes. Like, I can barely see distance now. I had to have my husband read something to me on the TV because I couldn't see it.
Oh, that's so sad. You're old.
I'm getting really old.
You're super old.
Oh, there was this other thing, speaking of the medical exams, there's a part where Tommy's freaking out and he accidentally hits her in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize like how big of a deal that was at first until, you know, everyone's like, what happened? And the doctors are coming over her and checking her because every little scratch on them could matter.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I didn't get that until the movie.
Okay, me neither.
Yeah. Kathy sometimes has a faulty memory and we never get the whole story. She does this thing a lot where she's like, I could be wrong, but, or she'll tell this story and then it'll be like, that might not have been the way it was. Or timelines are really weird. So like Ruth remembers something as a very short timeline. Oh, it was that protector thing where they were protecting Miss Emily.
I thought Kathy was kind of putting that in there in case she could be wrong, but I feel like Ruth exaggerated everything and shortened everything to make herself look better. So
that could be true.
I actually trusted Kathy more as a narrator than anyone outside of it.
The other thing is, though, when you're a kid, time kind of stretches on forever.
Yeah.
Like, I could not tell you anything about timelines from when I was a child. I mean, maybe just because of weather.
I had or a holidays. Christmas this one year that lasted a year.
Well, but that's what I mean. Like, Christmas took forever to come when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And when you're a grown-up, it's completely different.
That's true.
Like, 2 weeks when you're a kid feels like 2 months to an adult.
Yeah, I think no matter what, you have to kind of keep in mind that this is her version, her memories, and...
Mm-hmm. Hailsham is a secluded and mysterious place. It's completely cut off from the outside world. The children there are cared for by guardians, and the headmistress is Miss Emily. Another important figure for the children is Madame, who comes to Hailsham periodically to review and collect the students' best artwork and poetry. Do you have anything to say about her?
Yeah, she's a really interesting figure throughout kind of the whole book. And the children set up the girls, led by none other than Ruth. Anyway, they set this trap and they find out that she is really afraid of them. And she's kind of afraid of them like people are of spiders or snakes or heights. And it really shapes the girls after that. They don't really understand why she's afraid of them in that way. And they know they're different and they know they're born for different reasons, but they don't understand why she's scared.
Yeah. I didn't understand this completely when I first read it. I mean, I still don't understand it. I don't have a definite answer about it, but I think we understand it a little bit more once the book ends. But I read an article on a site called Electric Lit by a woman named Mimi Wong, and she posits that there's a racial metaphor in Never Let Me Go.
Yeah, I kind
of... Did you read that?
I didn't read it, but you can kind of see it, and
yeah,
I understand. Like, I kind of thought that a couple times about how we treat other people and how we some people treat people of other colors as less than.
Right.
And we like to keep them marginalized and in the shadows.
Marginalized is exactly right. And we create an other and use that as an excuse to mistreat them and use them mm-hmm. as a resource.
Yeah.
And this woman, Mimi Wong, she had a good point about how whites have, in the science field, have exploited especially black bodies. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really good point, and it really paralleled what is going on here. And I think that is a big cause of Madame's revulsion towards the kids, because it's kind of like closing yourself off and creating the other. You can't, they're kids. You can't attach yourself to them. Otherwise, you're going to love on them, right?
I mean, ideally, but kind of all the guardians at the school, most of them are afraid of them.
I didn't read it that they were afraid, but I'll be honest, I glazed over like half this book. I didn't like skip over it. I just mm-hmm. was reading and not paying attention because it was so fucking boring.
Okay. I think some of them so definitely bored. Felt bad for them, but I don't think any of them saw them as human.
So it was more like a pity thing right. than an empathy thing.
Exactly. Okay. That's how I got took it.
Okay. No, I totally get that. And I think you're 100% right.
Okay. There's kind of a big mystery about why she takes their art, and mm-hmm. they say it's not a strict rule, but nobody talks about the gallery, and you actually don't find out until the end of the book, so I'm not going to tell you here.
Okay. I have one more thing to say about that, too.
Yeah.
The scene where Ruth leads that little group to taunt mm-hmm. Madame, and then they feel shitty because she's
afraid of them.
Afraid of them. Grossed out by them, basically, yeah. is what she is. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me, this is a stretch, but it kind of reminded me of like how you feel when you're orphaned, mm. where you finally see yourself as like exposed to the world, and that you are completely alone, and there are people, like the world could swallow you up, basically, when they see themselves in the mirror, and they're just like, or when she says she sees, I can't talk because I've had so much whiskey. Okay, hold on. So there's a point where Kathy says it's like when you've walked by a mirror 1,000 times and then suddenly you see yourself differently. Something looks different in okay. this mirror. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. It's kind of like the world gets more dimension because there's a little bit more danger there because you're seen as that marginalized character.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does. I can't 100% wrap my brain around that, but I do get what you're saying.
It's like they're completely sheltered. Mm-hmm. Madame doesn't live with them.
Right.
She's not with them all the time. She's kind of a reflection of what the outside world might see them as.
Okay.
So things can get cruel.
Okay.
Whereas things at their school really aren't.
Okay. I guess I just don't get the orphan aspect of that.
Like you're alone. You don't have a safety net.
Okay.
You're that's why Tommy and Ruth and Kathy are so important to each other, I think, because the they don't know what a family is.
The kids are kind of raised to take care of each other, so
yeah,
I don't know, they're kind of their own family.
Well, yeah, because they don't have anything, they don't have any other family model to follow,
right?
Because the only things they're taught are how to order tea at a fucking restaurant,
which they are not taught in the book.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, they are. I don't remember that part.
Yeah.
All right. Well, evidently I glazed over as well.
they played store.
Okay. I don't remember yeah. that. Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Ready to move on?
Yep.
So the main people in Kathy's life at Hailsham and beyond are Tommy and Ruth. In the beginning, Tommy is seen as a social outcast due to his horrendous temper tantrums. Kathy is one of the only kids to show him kindness and friendship. Ruth becomes Kathy's absolute best friend. But she's also a frenemy and a total bitch.
I wonder how you feel about Ruth.
I really don't like Ruth. I don't like Kathy either, or Tommy, so it's fine.
Okay.
I hated this book.
all right. Well, final thoughts. There you are. All the kids really bully Tommy, and this kind of follows him throughout his life, and I felt so bad for him.
Well, even Kathy and Ruth bully him at points.
I know. Through his whole life, even towards the end, Kathy's like, oh, Tommy, you're so stupid.
Yeah, shut up, idiot, or whatever she says. And it's like, God, you're a bitch.
I felt really bad for him. He had these horrendous temper tantrums because kids are so fucking mean. And then one of the teachers pulls him aside and tells him, you know, he's not creative. That's okay. Just be. And after that, he seems to kind of have himself under control.
Well, because it all starts with that elephant that he draws.
Right.
It was like Kathy was trying to say,
basically, if you're not creative in the school, you are worthless. And there aren't, like, you're not taught sciences or anything like that. They don't teach them, like, hard sciences. They're not learning chemistry. They have lots of art classes and sex classes and health classes.
I hated this book.
Okay.
So, hold on. I have stuff to say about their friendships, unless you want to move on. So Ruth and Kathy are, did you read them as best friends? How did you read them? How did you see their relationship?
Let's see. I saw them as best friends, but I saw Ruth as this popular girl who wants to be special, and she'll do that by any way means possible. And I saw Kathy as more of a kind-hearted person, and she kind of just follows Ruth and takes whatever Ruth dishes. She's really loyal to Ruth. And the couple times she tries to assert herself, Ruth really isolates her. But I did read them as best friends. And I know growing up, I had some friends like that that were not nice, but I still liked them and wanted to be friends with them. And I don't think I thought enough of myself to stand up for myself and be like, I do not deserve to be treated like this.
Mm-hmm. They usually are the glue of the group. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be left out of the group either.
Right.
Not you, but like in general. Twins.
No, but everybody. It's really horrible to feel left out when you are a child, I think, especially in an isolated world that they are in.
Oh, yeah, because that's the world. That's all there is to them.
Right.
And it's not like they have parents to go home to at night.
Exactly.
There's no reprieve. I just hated how manipulative Ruth was. And she's always twisting things and making stuff up.
But I think people are really like that. That's the whole point. Are. Like,
I know. I've had friends like that, too.
I can name people right now I know that are like that.
Not me, right?
No.
Okay.
Thanks for not being a Ruth.
Okay, you're welcome. And Kathy, I feel like Kathy always knows what she's up to and always helps her save face.
She does. She covers for her on numerous occasions. But right. I think she truly loves her.
I don't doubt that she loves her. I just hate that she loves her because I didn't like Ruth.
I just see it as an abusive relationship, and it's not as easy to separate yourself from. And I really see her as loving her.
But here's the thing is that when you're raised in this environment at this point, like with the pencil case and all that stuff, aren't they only like 12?
Yeah, so to explain that, Ruth magically gets this pencil case that she lies to everybody and says she's gotten special treatment from one of the guardians. And Kathy knows that that's not true. She bought it at a school sale.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries to call her on it, and she sees Ruth get nervous and weird, so then she covers for her.
Mm-hmm. So if she's only 12, like how much culpability can she really have, especially because secrecy and stories are what they're taught from birth? But I still can't stand it. Like, it still drives me nuts. It's a visceral reaction that I have to people who are manipulative. I just fucking hate it.
It's definitely annoying. I don't think I hate it. I mean, I felt bad for Kathy. I don't think I had like that visceral reaction that you're talking about.
Okay.
It definitely wasn't great, and I wanted Kathy to be self-assured and to stand up for herself, but, you know, she's 12, and we all have been taken advantage of by our friends, I think.
Especially at 12.
Yeah.
Anything else on that note?
Nope.
One of the only connections the kids have to the outside world is through the sales that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The kids exchange tokens for items off of a delivery van that comes out to Hailsham. What is it, like every...
They have them four times a year.
Four times a year. Okay. So in the movie, I couldn't remember from the book, but in the movie, the items seem to be junk no one in the real world would want.
Right. It is.
Okay. And this is how Kathy gets her prized possession, a tape with a song called Never Let Me Go. The tape eventually goes missing, which is a huge disappointment for Kathy.
The kids, when they're learning kind of geography, there's this when they are taught about Norfolk, they don't have the normal picture. So they kind of make up the story that it's like a lost and found, and they call it the lost corner of England. And the children believe everything they lose eventually winds up there. And so Kathy hopes that someday she'll be able to go there and find her lost tape. And I thought this was a great way to show how everything outside of Hailsham is such a fantasy. Like, they have no clue what's out there.
I love that.
They're just really making up stuff at this point.
That's all they can do.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Because they're, that's, I love that.
Even though you hate this book.
That's not fair that I hate the book. I just have really conflicted feelings about it as all.
Okay.
Which I'll get to later. One of my questions was, okay, number one, going back to the pencil case really quick.
Yeah.
You got in my brain from the last episode and I was like, who's paying her off? Who is molesting her and giving her this fucking pencil case as a bribe to keep quiet?
Everybody's molesting the children everywhere.
It like got in my mind like I'm a worm. So
sorry.
It was horrible. I couldn't stop. It was so sad.
I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah, it's fine. So my other question is, did one of the guardians take the tape after Madame saw Kathy dancing?
I have that written down. So Madame sees her dancing and she's standing in the hallway crying and the tape disappears after that. And Kathy never puts it together. She thinks the student stole it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the guardians are way more invasive than the children ever realize.
Oh, and that's good.
Part of the issue with this tape, not just because the line that she really loves and is drawn to is baby, baby, never let me go.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue with the tape is the woman singing on the cover is holding a cigarette. And that is such a no-no at Hailsham because obviously these kids are not supposed to smoke. So I think the teachers, the guardians are probably searching the kids' stuff. I think they go through their stuff and take it away. And she never thinks this, which I don't understand. It seems so logical. She thinks, I don't know, they're just at this lovely school in the country.
Here is where I start to get into one of my problems with the book. Well, it's not a problem with the book because I have kind of an explanation for it. But I do have a question about it.
Okay.
So I think what you just said goes back to the reason that they don't run away. It's because of how they've been socialized.
Okay. Brainwashed. Sort of.
Basically. Yeah, that's the whole
There is a fence around the school. And at one point, Miss Lucy, one of the guardians, makes a comment that it's good it's not electric like the fences from World War One, because bad things happened then. And I think this really shows that if the children ever wanted to, they could leave. There's nothing physically keeping them there.
Right. I don't think there is either.
And I think that was a really good conversation to let the reader know that this is by the children's choice. They're there by their own free will. They could leave. I mean, we'll get into the psychological aspects of it. Yeah, but
that's what I'm saying is like,
physically, there's nothing holding them there.
Physically, there's nothing holding them there. But
I think
it's just like with Ruth, where if that's all she knows, are you going to?
Right.
It's not really a choice.
I just think it's a good point to have in there that physically nothing is stopping these children from leaving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they've got all those ghost stories, too, about the kid that gets tied to the tree and all that stuff.
And has his hands and head cut off or something.
Hands and feet cut off. I don't know why that's funny. Oh, and the girl that... Oh.
And then they ate them. Just kidding.
After they molested them. But there's also the story about the girl who goes outside the boundary. And they don't let her back in. And she just paces back and forth until she starves to death.
Right.
So that's fucking shitty, too.
I couldn't tell if these rumors are started by other children or by the guardians.
I don't know.
Okay.
But I don't think it matters.
There's rumors all over the school. I wonder how like a private elite boarding school is. And I wonder how this compares. I grew up in public school. You grew up on a boat.
I grew up not in school.
So I just wonder how.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Anyway.
If anybody knows, tell us.
Yeah,
tell
I would love to know your boarding school stories.
This is not like a prompt for a penthouse letter, though.
No.
We want to know your boarding school stories about like the ghost stories and the scary shit that happened.
And the bitches who abused you.
God, no.
Not in that way. We want to hear about your own personal Ruth.
Yes, that is perfect. The other thing I had at the section was where she's talking about collections. And I thought it was so cool. The collections of stuff with the tape and the boxes and all that. I thought it was so cool how like every kid has collections, right?
Yeah, you have weird crap that you think is important and you hold on to for way too long.
Right. And I just thought that was so cool how they talk about all these collections and it kind of takes the reader back. Mm-hmm. Like it gets the reader to call back to those feelings and those memories. And I really liked that part.
What did you collect?
Oh my God. What did I collect? I mean, I had a lot of those ViewMaster things.
Oh, I love those things.
I had a ton of them. I had a lot.
I know no one can see, but I'm really happy you held up your hand to your eye to like click the thing.
Is that what I did?
Yeah.
Yeah, those were great. What else did I collect? I mean, I had Pogs, but I didn't know.
Oh my gosh, I loved Pogs. I have no idea what they're for. I don't.
I only ever got them from Bags of Chips. Oh. Can you buy them? Where do you get them?
I would buy them. I didn't know they were in Bags of Chips.
Oh, if we had gotten together with our Pog collections. Also, I don't even remember what was on them. Like, what were they? We're going to have to Google this because I have no idea what purpose they served.
In our show notes, the meaning of Pogs.
What you've always wanted to know. The other thing I noticed in this section was she says something like, I don't know if you had collections where you were. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be donors, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. She says it a lot. She talks about, I don't know what school you were at. I don't know what your friends were like where you were. And yeah, you are supposed to be another donor reading this.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a donor. Okay. Are we done with that section?
Yeah, we're done.
Okay. I am confused about this part.
Okay.
But we'll tell you about it and then you tell me why I'm wrong. Once the kids hit a certain age, the newest guardian, Miss Lucy, decides to tell Tommy that their sole purpose is to become organ donors. Vital organ donors. That's not right.
Nope, that's not right. She tells a
That was in the movie. That's why I'm confused.
Okay. She tells Tommy that he doesn't have to be creative and that's okay, but she tells an entire group, they're actually playing outside.
That's right. Okay.
That they're not being taught all that they need to be taught. And their sole purpose is to become organ donors because the kids like to talk about going to America and being actresses and actors or playing on a sports team.
And so just dreaming like kids do.
Right. And she tells them they're never going to do that. There's no point in fantasizing about this because this will never be your life.
Yes.
And I actually think this is a great pivotal part in the book. And it shows a lot because this doesn't shock the children. And Kathy kind of explains that they know this, they have always known this, and that the guardians mention things like this and that they're donors since before she can remember, but they always mention it with something that catches the kids' attention more, like, oh, you're gonna donate all your organs and this is how you have sex. And
it's a form of control, essentially.
I think it's a form of brainwashing. You're fed this information so that you just know it, but there's always something more interesting on top of it. So it still sinks into your brain, but you never really stop and contemplate this fact. And
plus, you're a child, so
the kids also make donating into a joke. They joke about this. So
I don't remember that.
It's really not a big deal to them.
Yeah. So I was conflating those two scenes, I think.
Okay, with Miss Lucy talking to Tommy in the class.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're two different things. She has her talk with Tommy pretty early in the book, and the scene comes a little bit further when they're older.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as she tells them, she gets fired.
Yes, she is promptly tossed out.
Because they definitely have a way of doing things at Hailsham, which is letting the kids know without it being kind of thrown in their face.
Mm-hmm.
So they know they're donors, but it's not so cut and dried. And they are taught that this is a noble thing that they're doing. Do you not see it that way?
No, I 100% do. I just don't have anything to say about it.
Okay.
At 16, the students go to the other areas of the country. Almost, to me, they were almost like halfway houses, like transitional places.
I thought they were more like colleges.
Ooh, that's a cool way to look. See, I'm like looking at it so negative and you're like, this is growing up. And
I looked at it like Hailsham was like they graduated high school and they go off to college. And that's how I took it.
That makes sense, especially because of the carer training. Kathy, Ruth, and Tommy are sent to a place called the Cottages, essentially a rundown farm, where they transition from school to the world of caretaking or donations. Here they meet other people from other schools, including two quote-unquote veterans named Chrissy and Rodney, and they're a catalyst for some major movements in the book.
I never remember his name, but I love him so much, the guy who plays Rodney in the movie.
Bill Weasley.
It is Bill Weasley. I can't think of his real name. That's what I was after.
I don't know his real name either.
Okay.
That's all we need is Bill Weasley.
When they get to the cottages, Hailsham actually gives them an assignment to write an essay.
Oh, that's when they get there.
Yeah. And I think this is really good because it serves the purpose of keeping the kids tied to the school, but it also really prevents them from really thinking about what they have to do.
Ooh, very good. Yeah.
And it gives them time to adjust to their new life. And they, as time goes on, she clearly knows that the essay is not important and she doesn't have to write it. But she, I mean, they get to choose their subjects. They really study and research these things. They put a lot of effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of keeps those blinders on.
Did we ever find out what, Kathy's subject was?
Yeah, it's Victorian novels.
That's right. That's cool.
Yeah, and she says even later in life when she is a carer traveling around, she still thinks of things she would have put in her novel or different books she would have read or different, you know, research topics she wishes she would have wrote something instead. And I think it really kind of gives them purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They're so unprepared for this outside world that they actually copy a lot of things from TV shows. And it made me wonder how much we do this without ever realizing it.
Oh, I know I do it. I know I do.
How much is just ingrained in us from even childhood that we don't realize?
Another thing is like that goes back to they're couples now and they've never had modeling to follow. They've never had a nuclear family. So what else are they supposed to do? And when Kathy holds it against Ruth that she's copying the TV, I'm like, Kathy, you're a bitch too. Fuck off. What else is Ruth supposed to do? She's winging it. She's going off the only example she can,
I think,
which
Kathy
is Chrissy and Rodney and the TV.
Wants her to be herself. And Ruth has got to be like and better than everyone else.
Well, and there is nothing behind Ruth. What else is she supposed to?
She's supposed to be a person. Is that offensive to your clone? To your, what's the word I'm looking? I can't even think of it. To your,
I don't know. Narrator.
No.
Analytical.
Are you just going to throw out words I put on you?
Book, coffee table.
You're confusing me a lot more. Prejudices. Sorry. Your clone prejudices.
There is no prejudice. I'm just.
Are you anti-clone? I am going to write a letter. Are you against the free the clone movement?
I kind of am, and I'll talk to you about that later.
Okay, don't talk to me about it now.
No, I'll talk to you about it at the our final thoughts section, but I just thought it was shitty of Kathy, and Ruth is shitty. Everyone's shitty. Go ahead.
While they're at this house, Ruth keeps putting Kathy down to make herself feel better. And in the meantime, Kathy keeps having one-night stands, and I don't know how even sex can be boring in this book.
It was so mechanical, and it was never, and I wanted, some steamy romance scenes.
Ooh, I have all these urges. I have to do whoever I see. There was nothing behind it.
Because they're clones. I feel bad because they're teenagers. I shouldn't wish to see steamy romance scenes.
They're 18 by the time this happens.
In the movie.
Oh, right. Well, in the movie. The movie did have some hotter sex in the book.
Yeah, there was something. But it looked so guilty. Like, Andrew Garfield, like, turns his head and covers his face. And I'm like, oh.
Probably because he's trying to imagine it's Kathy and not Ruth. Which, probably. Screw that. Who wouldn't prefer Keira Knightley?
That I don't disagree with. Okay, so what were we talking about?
They take this trip to the lost corner of England.
Ding, ding.
Really quick, in the movie, there's this scene where the five of them are sitting around this table trying to order, and I thought it was really funny.
I did too. It was so cute.
There are not many lighthearted instances in this, and yeah. I appreciated the humor of that.
The one other lighthearted part was when the van comes with a quote-unquote bumper crop for the kids for the sale. Mm-hmm. And they are standing at the door, and there's all these little kids standing there waiting, and they're like, is it a bumper crop? And the guy is like, it's a bumper crop.
And they couldn't even understand what they were saying.
It was so cute. They just jumped up and down and screamed. It was adorable.
What does that mean?
I don't know exactly like the origins of it, but a bumper crop is like your cart overfloweth.
Oh, okay.
With like, you know, corn or something.
Yeah, I totally didn't get it. So
here, I'm going to Google it real quick.
Right over my head.
In agriculture, a bumper crop is a crop that has yielded unusually productive harvest. Can also be a source of problems, such as when there's insufficient storage space. But it was really productive harvest is what they meant.
Great. I couldn't even understand what they were saying in the movie, much less understand what that phrase meant.
Well, if you were unfamiliar with the phrase to begin with,
I was,
then you wouldn't have. So. Yeah, you wouldn't have heard it correctly.
I knew they were real excited, and weird guy was like, yes, darling.
It was so cute. I loved it. Anyway, back to the scene in the diner, and they just all order sausage, egg, and chips, and five Cokes. They can't be individuals, no matter how hard they try.
I know. I just thought it was amusing and lighthearted, and this movie needed a few more moments like that.
It did, because I felt like there were lighthearted moments in the book, right?
Sure.
Maybe I'm wrong.
There were some, but I think they're few and far between.
Maybe that's why I hated this book, because I'm ready for something with levity, and this is like so sad.
All right. So the whole reason they're going there is they go to look for Ruth's possible, which a possible is the person they were modeled off of. So they're original.
Yeah.
I really, really wanted to see Natalie Portman in that office.
Oh, because of Star Wars?
Yeah.
That would have been genius.
I feel like that would have been the perfect thing this movie needed.
Why didn't they do that? That would have been so funny. Because now they don't look anything alike.
If you could have aged up Natalie Portman even like 10 years, like added a few wrinkles to her and had her in that office, it would have been so great. I would have loved it so much.
That would have been perfect. Good plan. We need to reshoot the movie.
Yeah, that's not what I have in mind for my future.
Okay. Oh, while they're sitting at the diner.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that? Because I don't.
Okay, so they go to look for, they're looking for Ruth's possible and stuff. And I thought it was clever that he put her quote unquote possible in an office, because throughout the whole book, Ruth really builds her life on these fake images that she glimpses. Mm-hmm. And one of them's in a magazine in an office. And that's really what she wants to do. That's her dream life. Mm-hmm. And it makes me really sad for her, because she never just lives. Kathy and Tommy both find happiness in their life. They find their own semi-purpose. And Ruth never does. It just makes me really sad for her as a person. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. And I kind of like seeing her in that way, too. Mm-hmm.
So it turns out not to be Ruth's possible. And then you kind of find out that Chrissy and Rodney seem to have an alternative motive for getting the three away from the cottages. and they want to talk about how there is a possible deferral program for students of Hailsham. And if a boy and a girl are truly in love and can prove it, then they will get 3 or 4 years to be together before their first donation. That really pulls the book through the rest of the way. There's also a scene here that Chrissy and Rodney go into a Woolworths.
Uh-huh.
And they stock up on birthday cards. They buy them in bulk. And one, do clones celebrate their birthdays? Do they?
They're not born, right?
I have so many questions about clone birthdays now. My other thing is, you were literally just an organ donor. Why are you buying anything in bulk? I sure shit wouldn't even be making a Costco run.
No.
Come on.
That, I didn't even pick up on that, and I don't understand it. It's one of the three things that I really have a lot of questions about now.
Are you just randomly giving people birthday cards?
Do they not know what birthdays are?
I don't know. It's never explained.
Shit, and we're not going to have an answer now. God damn it, Casey.
Anyway, I have questions with no answers about clone birthdays.
Yeah.
So while they are there.
In Norfolk.
Yes. Ruth finds out it's not her possible in this office, and she freaks out and says they're all modeled off of garbage. And she freaks out. She yells at Tommy and Kathy, and then Ruth takes off with Chrissy and Rodney. And leaves Tommy and Kathy behind. They go to hang out with some other guy. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
Oh, that's right.
Tommy brings up the fact that Kathy lost her Judy Bridgewater tape in school. And he really wants to find it for her. So they start searching all of these record shops.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy actually finds the tape. And I think this here is such a beautiful metaphor that Kazoo uses for clones, because she finds a copy and she knows that it's not the original, but it's still so beautiful and perfect to her, and she still cherishes this, and this new tape even brings her more memories.
Oh,
and I really just love that part so much.
That's amazing. I did not pick up on any of that at all, and that makes me so happy.
Did I read way too much into a tape?
You didn't. No, I think that's the perfect reading of it.
Okay.
I couldn't connect anything is all.
I really, really loved this because she specifically says it's not the original, but I still listen to it to this day.
Oh, that is so cool.
And I think she's not the original, but she's still important. She's still worth something. She's a copy, but she's still worth something.
She's still human.
Right. And so
that's really beautiful.
I thought, good job, Mr. Ishiguro. You did a great job with that part. I thought it was just phenomenal.
That's gorgeous. I really love that.
Okay, so Tommy comes up with this gallery theory that ties back into the deferrals, and he thinks that the proof that the couple has to show is from their art, because he thinks that art is a window into their soul, and that Madame will be able to look at the art that she took and they produced to see if they truly are soulmates. And Kathy really goes along. She thinks it's a little bit crazy, but she kind of goes along with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut this from the movie, but Tommy shows Ruth and Kathy his art, and she doesn't really say much about it. But then later, Kathy and Ruth are kind of trashing Tommy, and Ruth brings it up to Tommy, and that really causes a catalyst for the trio breaking up.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that too, just really quickly before we move on, that whole deferral scene in the movie was they just laughed and shrugged. It didn't show nearly how.
No, it's a really harsh, important thing.
Yeah, they didn't show how harsh Kathy and Ruth were about it. And they've glossed over it in the movie, essentially. Yeah.
It's a big part of the rest of the book.
Yeah. So you were saying about the animals and that being the that was the catalyst for Kathy leaving?
Yes, it was, because she doesn't defend herself and Tommy's really hurt. Because Ruth,
why doesn't she say anything about that?
She doesn't through the whole book, like until the very end. She never stands up for herself and she thinks about it later, like, oh, I should have done this. But even I think about, like, if I sat and thought about things, oh, I should have handled this situation differently. How could this have changed things? And part of that's just with maturity.
Yeah, that's true.
And part of it's with hindsight. Like,
yeah,
I should have spoken up. I should have spoken out against something that I didn't. And I think that resonates with everybody.
That definitely does. I just feel like, do you feel like that it's exaggerated in the book because of their socialization too?
Probably, but I look at this also as Kathy telling the story at the end of her life. So us telling a story in our 80s.
Yeah.
And realizing something that drastically changed our lives just because we stayed silent.
Yeah. The other thing that's really interesting about that too is, like you said, hindsight. There's a lot of points in the narrative where it's like when Ruth leaves, I'm sorry, when Kathy leaves, I get them confused so much. But when Kathy leaves, she says something like, I didn't realize how much it would divide them.
Right.
Or that I wouldn't see them again for like 10 years or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really how things happen in life. You don't realize these big pivotal moments until you look back on them.
Right. Sometimes. You don't realize they are a pivotal moment until you're much further along. Anyway, eventually Kathy gets sick of Ruth's bullshit and she decides to leave for her carer training. And there's also this moment here that Ruth stoops so low as to tell Kathy that Tommy will never be with her because Kathy has slept with too many other guys.
She slut shames her.
She full on slut shames her. And Kathy actually fucking thanks her for letting her know. And I'm so mad at Kathy in this moment for being like, oh, well, thank you for telling me. No, not thank you for telling me. Screw you.
Because honestly, if you're going to die at a young age, shouldn't you like bone as many people as possible? Let's be honest. Okay. She won't see Ruth. Okay. So Kathy leaves for her training. She won't see Ruth and Tommy again for many years until after she becomes Ruth's carer. In an effort to make amends for being a total cunt, Ruth tells Kathy that the possibility of deferral is real and gives her contact info for Madame.
So during one scene that Ruth is with Kathy and Tommy, Ruth admits that she's cheated on Tommy the whole time they were together back at the cottages.
After slut shaming Kathy.
And no one bats an eye at this. They're like, it just moves on. Is this not a big deal?
Well, they made it seem like sex was not a big deal, but Ruth is the one who made a big deal about
it. Ruth says, you've been with too many other guys. Tommy will never be with you. Anytime I want sex, I just have Tommy. That is not what's happening. She really makes a huge deal out of this. And then, oh, by the way, I was fucking other guys the whole time I was with you.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't make sense to me either.
Okay, well, Ruth ends up apologizing to Kathy and Tommy, saying she's sorry she kept them apart, and she does try to make amends before she quote-unquote completes. So I don't know. I feel like in the end she tried to be a good person, and I don't know if it was too late for her.
I don't know.
So Ruth dies after her second donation.
That's early, right?
Most people complete on their fourth, but I believe Chrissy completed on her second as well. Some people complete on their first. So once again, I don't really know. But anyway, Ruth completes on her second donation and Tommy and Kathy start a relationship that they should have had all along. Looking at this, I couldn't help but relate it to, you know, those news stories you hear about the old couple that were friends when they were younger and then they get married when they're like 93.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You think it's happy. It's so fucking sad. Think about all the years they wasted. Tommy talks about oh, I used to be able to have sex twice in a row and all this stuff. And he's so sick now that he can't. And it makes me sad. All this time they should have had together was lost.
Because of Ruth.
Right. It just reminded me of those old couples who get together at the end. It made me sad. Like, I know they're happy stories and you're like, oh, yay, they found each other. But it's so sad at the same time because they don't have much time left.
No, they don't. This is why I don't know. I just hate Ruth. That's all I have to say. I hated Ruth.
Don't be a Ruth.
Yeah.
Ugh. So they end up, they have their relationship and all of that. And they end up going to Madame in hopes of getting a deferral, only to be told that the rumor is never true.
I feel like Ruth knew all along that this rumor was bullshit.
I don't think so. I think she's naive like everybody else. And she believes everything, though. I don't think she knew that. I think she tried her best to be a good friend in the end. You can disagree.
I know. I just don't. The problem is I don't have anything to back up what I have to say. I don't have any evidence. This is just what I believe.
That's fine.
I just hated her so much.
I get it. Like, it really sucks. And I feel that she tried to make amends for living her life the way she did.
Yeah. That's the logical explanation, too. No, I mean it. Like, I'm serious. Like, as stories go and as human beings age, just like Kathy is doing, she probably looked back and was like, wow, I suck. You know?
I think Kathy does a really good job of admitting her faults throughout the book, where Ruth doesn't until the very end.
Was Ruth even self-aware through the whole thing?
I don't think she was until the very, very, like, bitter end.
And it gets to the point where you kind of can't blame her because of all. And she was literally a kid, so.
I mean.
Like, I look back at the stupid shit I did, and I was literally a child until, like, the age of probably 28.
Yeah.
When I got pregnant.
I still feel like a child sometimes, and how am I in charge of raising a human to be responsible in a world?
That's self-awareness, though.
Yeah, I guess.
Miss Emily ends up telling Tommy and Kathy that Hailsham was just an experiment, because up until this point, clones, and I think this is one of the first times, this is the first time they use the word clone, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah. Clones were not treated well. She didn't really go into a lot of detail about that. I mean,
you kind of get that they're kept in dark cellars and treated badly.
They're not treated like people. They're treated like chattel, basically. Right. Mm-hmm. And that the purpose of the gallery was to show the rest of the world that these clones really did have souls, that they essentially were people.
Right. And to show what contributions they could make.
Right. And that's it.
Okay. So Miss Emily explains that science simply moved too quickly. The cloning breakthrough happens, and then all of a sudden, all these incurable diseases were now non-existent, and people, the average age was past 100. I thought this brought up a really good point. Like, how far would you go for your loved ones? Like, if this was a possibility for you, would you take it?
If it was for my child, yeah.
That's what I mean. So all of these people who are treating these clones this way, then you take the flip side, and, you know, how far would you go? And these people are seen as less than human. People definitely want to keep them in the shadows. And I think it's easier to ignore a problem when you don't have to look too closely at it.
Oh, 100% true. And they did the same thing in World War II with the Japanese, also with all those caricatures of them as, like, beasts.
So Miss Emily here explains that, you know, Hailsham was the experiment, and she really tried to protect them and give them good lives. She tried to give their lives purpose and meaning. And I think she actually kind of did a good job, because other than Ruth, I feel like Kathy and Tommy did lead their own lives, and they found things that they enjoyed and that made them happy. Yeah.
Because Tommy has his art and Kathy has being a carer.
And her Victorian novels that she really does love.
Yeah.
Miss Emily also tells them that they were lucky pawns and they don't know how good they had it compared to elsewhere. Mm-hmm. The Hailsham experiment was at one time really popular with the politicians. And then there is an experiment gone wrong where one of the scientists tries to make a superior being.
What? Mm-hmm. Where was I for that part?
And that is, I don't know where you were.
God damn it.
And then
not reading this book again.
And then that's when people say it's gone too far and people get really scared. Uh-huh. And so they shut down all of the schools that tried to raise them humanely.
Okay.
It suddenly became not popular to be part of this. And that's when Hailsham closes.
Okay.
After they find all this out, Miss Emily just drives away like no big deal, doesn't even look back. And Madame apologizes again. And so then Tommy and Ruth leave and they're driving back to his treatment center. And he asks Kathy to pull over and he kind of wanders out into a cow pasture and he really just freaks out and starts screaming. And in the movie, I thought Andrew Garfield did such an amazing job in this moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt it.
Yeah. And I actually thought to myself, I'm glad you brought this up, because I thought to myself, what resource is he digging from to do that? Like, what reference point is he even using? Because I don't know if I could even, like, begin to express emotion that way.
Right. If you haven't seen it, everyone needs to watch at least this one moment. I believe it's in the trailer and it's so heart-wrenching that it's just amazing. As much as you hate this book, I actually thought you would love it because this is like the pinnacle of fatalism. Do you not agree?
I don't disagree in any way.
But you still hate it.
Here's the thing. I don't hate it even. Like, I feel bad even saying that because it's a great book. I'm not saying it's not. I just, maybe, I feel blank inside.
Okay. I'm going to ignore that comment. So Tommy does not survive his next donation, which is his fourth.
Okay.
And then you find out that Kathy has received her letter that in a month's time she will become a donor.
Okay.
So the book and the movie kind of diverge on this point. In the book, Tommy sends Kathy away because he doesn't want her to see him that way.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because he knows he's not going to make it past his fourth donation. Uh-huh. And I felt like this kind of was true for when people are really sick and they know they're dying and they don't want their loved ones to see them like that.
Or like how when a cat runs away when it's ready to die.
Yeah, just like that.
Poor creature.
In the book, when Tommy's sending Kathy away, he makes this really beautiful analogy. And this is when I started to cry. He tells her that they're standing in this really powerful river and that no matter how much they want to hold on to each other, the current's just too strong and it's time that they let each other go. Mm-hmm. Even though they love each other so much, they know that they can't stay together.
In the movie, that scene where she doesn't leave and she just watches him complete, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah.
And she's standing there. It's basically really like a viewing room into an operating room. My husband was like, so you just stand there and watch somebody you love get cut open and die.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah.
Like, you can see him as they're giving him the drugs to, like, the anesthesia. He fights to keep his eyes open looking at her. Mm-hmm. It was really sad.
I thought that was even sadder than, like, how the book was.
I thought the book did a nice little fade to black there. So in the book also, Kathy really holds on and cherishes all of her memories. And she goes back to Norfolk after Tommy completes. This is their town of lost things. And she imagines that she can see Tommy across the field with all of the other lost things blowing in. Mm-hmm. And she just lets herself cry for a minute and not picture it too much and gets in her car and drives on to wherever she has to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what kind of person, like, I don't know what you are to be able to do that and to just be okay and moving on. And I don't know if they look at their life, her whole 31 years, as that's old age.
Mm-hmm.
So in the movie, at the very end, she asks, she, like, her voiceover asks if...
Oh, my God.
She asks if anyone has enough time.
Oh, my God. That made me so angry.
Why?
Because it's so... like pandering. We don't need it. We can make the connection ourselves. Like, that was the one okay. obvious thing in the movie.
Yeah. So
does, and I was like, why do we need this here? It just made me angry.
Does anyone ever have enough time? Like, when you're at the end of your life, no matter when it is it enough time?
No.
And what do you do to get more time? How much do you marginalize people, though? I'm saying, if this was based on a true story, what do you do to get your extra time? Are you okay with this?
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's like a moral question.
Yeah, that's just kind of how I took it. So
the other thing that I thought was interesting about that scene, too, is where she's, and this is like my only point about the entire book, and it doesn't even matter, but it's like, talk about fatalism. Mm-hmm. The part where she's talking about how the rubbish is blown into the fence.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Ruth's beach speech. I thought it called back to Ruth's speech about trash and kind of like how you're talking about marginalizing people, where, you know, basically they walk around in these bodies and whatever is left over that can't be used ends up, you know, as
waste.
Trash.
That's really waste. Sad.
It is really sad. And how those marginalized people, the, you know, junkies, the prostitutes, all those people are considered, quote unquote, trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that if that's who they're modeled after, what does that make us?
Yeah.
But really, none of those people were ever trash to begin with. They were people.
Right.
So that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, so kind of going back to the beginning, does this movie stand on its own? Like, I don't know, because I read the book first.
I had the same question.
I don't know that it's a standalone movie, though. Like, I don't know if you can watch this movie and get it without reading the book.
I feel like if you watch the movie, all you get is that last line where she's like, does anybody have enough time?
Probably. That's all, like, you... I...
Yeah.
I feel...
Because you don't get any of the manipulation from Ruth.
No, but you don't.
You get one thing and that's it.
You're missing out on a ton of inner dialogue. And
yeah,
in the book, one of the things that drove me crazy was she said, oh, but wait, let me explain this. And I actually
Hated that.
Drew a tiny picture of a gun that turned out looking like a penis, but that's different.
Are they really any different? Let's be
honest.
I mean,
come on. Like, there's so many things that she thinks is important in the book, and all of it's left out of the movie, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think this movie can stand by itself.
It can't. The only thing that it can come away with is that, like, coming of age thing that's been done a million times.
And it's not done well in this movie. I don't think it is.
It's a little shallow, right?
Yeah, like, I didn't get the depth of this book in the movie.
Not at all. And I don't even, I mean, you'd have to make it, what, like 4 hours long or something.
I don't know that you ever could, though. Yeah. I don't know that you can really
translate it.
I feel like it's such a generalized human story. There's nothing special about it. And so I hated reading this book, but by the end I was like, okay, I get it.
Okay.
And it made me like the book a lot more.
Okay.
I feel like it could be anybody's story. And I feel like that's the point. These people that are less than mm-hmm. nothing are just like you.
Yeah. I really like that point. Yes.
I don't think that will ever come through in a film.
I don't see how it could either. Not fully. Here's the problem I had. And I think this has been bothering me the entire time we've been talking about it. So I've just been waiting to get to it.
Okay.
And I think it goes off of what you were just saying. the cloning to me felt like a red herring. Like, I know that it comes in and it's important, but mm-hmm. because we kind of get hints and we know something shady is going on, sort of, mm-hmm. we keep sitting there on the edge of our seat waiting for something to happen and we never get a big reveal. Like, we never get a payoff. And so I wanted to have something more titillating, I guess.
Okay, the last two chapters are the only time that anything real happens, that you get any real answers that you've been waiting for the whole book.
Right.
But I think that's part of it. This is just a normal life. There's nothing.
So then why do we?
There's nothing big. There's nothing special. It's just a life, which is special in its own way.
That's true. And things, and going off of what you just said, is things don't really happen like that in life either. We hit these pivotal moments that we don't know are pivotal until we're looking back on them. But that's my whole thing is, like, I feel like we didn't even need the cloning. We didn't need it. We could have had something else instead, something more rooted in reality.
I think this is rooted in reality. Well, I mean, you can't see this ever happening and you don't see how we treat people like this.
Here's my other question. If they can manipulate genetics in a way that makes them all sterile, mm-hmm. why couldn't they just create the standalone organs? It would save a lot of money.
Yeah, I wonder how much they spent raising these children.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Or if you want to create an entire human body, why not? And you can manipulate genes. Why not create it so it doesn't have a consciousness? It's just a body then. Like, I think I'm angry about that.
Okay.
And that's why I couldn't finish connecting to the book.
Okay.
Is that petty? It might be really petty, but that's how I feel.
Okay, I didn't look into it that far. I just took it as this woman's life story. I didn't look into the science of it.
Maybe that's why I'm mad, too, is because I wanted more sci-fi elements.
This book is definitely not science fiction. I don't know. I mean, I get it. Science fiction is not a true story.
Dun, dun, dun.
However, I didn't take this as a science fiction book.
Yeah, and I think I was going into it.
Does that make sense, though?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Thematically, it's a throwaway. You don't need the cloning. It could be anything. So he just used that as a framework, as a catalyst.
So usually when we're reading kind of dystopian novels, we're right in the middle of a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is the nothing bit. And I'm waiting for the next book to come out. It's called Attack of the Clones, and it does not star Jar Jar Binks.
No, that totally makes sense, too. And it goes off of what you were saying also. And that's how most human lives are. Mm-hmm. We're not we don't live grand epics, you know?
Most of us don't.
No, we just live these.
I mean, we would like to think we do. We'd like to think that.
And maybe that's what Ruth was doing the entire time, was trying to create her own epic.
I think she was. I think she really wanted to be special and important. Yeah. And I think a lot of people do.
And that's totally relatable and understandable and forgivable. Every kid wants to feel special. So, okay, what just happened? Did I start liking the book and you started disliking it?
No, I still...
Okay.
I don't know that I want to read it again, but I really do like this book. I didn't think I did until the last two chapters, and then everything changed for me.
Okay.
Everything flipped in my mind.
Okay.
And I know you don't feel like that. You hate it.
No, that's I was exaggerating when I said that. I don't hate it.
It's
and
okay
I have,
if you don't like it. I
know, but I'm being sincere. I don't know how I feel about the book.
Reading the book, I got tired of her saying, oh, this is important. Let me explain this.
And yes. I couldn't stand that.
By the end of the book, I got it more.
Yeah.
And like I said, everything changed for me in my head. And I really do like this book.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to forget it for a very long time.
Agreed. Okay. It will be in our memory.
It really will.
For a while. Do you recommend watching the movie?
Not if you're not going to read the book.
Right.
If you want to watch the movie, you need to read the book. So if you don't want to read the book, don't watch the movie.
That's another thing too. Or, you know what?
Don't read the book, watch the movie, and then send me an email and let me know what you think.
Do that. Do that thing.
That's what I want. And then we'll read it on our episode.
Yes. And then we will read it on our episode because I want to know what the movie looks like from fresh eyes.
100%. Will someone please do that for us?
Please, anybody, just please.
I really we do need your help. Know.
Me too. And I think I just realized why I'm so angry, because I have wanted to see this movie since it came out in the theater. And I was like, no, I can't watch the movie till I read the book. And I never got around to reading the book.
Okay.
So I've waited, what, almost 9 fucking years yeah. to watch this movie. And then wow. this is what I get. So I'm a little pissed.
But are you a little bit glad you didn't go see this in the theater before you read the book?
Yeah, because I wouldn't have read the book.
Okay. Are those our final thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know what they are, but yes.
Okay. This was confusing.
And hard.
The whole thing's confusing. Someone email us and let us know what you think.
And let us know what we think.
And tell us if this movie stands on its own.
Yes, I do want to know if the movie stands on its own.
Okay. So, if you're reading along with us, our next book is a Christmas classic. It is called Nothing Lasts Forever. And if you think you don't know what that book is, it is the little Christmas movie called Die Hard.
Yes, it's going to be such a great change of pace.
The book is by Roderick Thorpe. And this episode will be released in 2 weeks. So we would love to hear from you. You can find us on our website at thelitflixpodcast.com. Please email us at thelitflixpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Goodreads. Please rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Cheers. We'll be right back.